So in this beautiful text, the subject is getting a little deeper today. As we know, the student, disillusioned with his or her life, looking for a better answer than what so far the colleges and universities have given him, approaches a teacher, a spiritual teacher, asking for true knowledge. And he wants to know, who am I? What is my purpose on this earth? From where did I come? What is this world that I perceive? And who is this God that people worship? So he approaches a teacher with humility, and he already has done some reading, has some knowledge, has developed a healthy dispassion for the world, is not dependent upon the world. Slowly he's developing that, or she. And at the same time has developed the concept of discrimination, of what is right, what is wrong, what is real, what is unreal. So slowly he has developed these qualities called the four qualities: discrimination, dispassion, control of the mind and intellect and senses, and the fourth is an intense desire for liberation. So the teacher starts today by answering the first question, who am I? So that is verse number 7 on page 23, those who have the text. Shri Guru Ruvacha Drishyam Yetad Chajadam Vikari Drishyam Yadetad Chajadam Vikari Sarvam Hyanatmaiva Mrisha Vinashi Sarvam Hyanatmaiva Mrisha Vinashi Atma Trudrishtaiva Chiti Svabhavaha Matudrishtaiva chiti svabhavah na drishyate napi nibadhyate va drishyate napi nibadhyate va. So he says, the guru watched, the guru said, is in the past tense, drishyam, that which is seen, yat etachya, this is all what? Jadam, inert, vikari, subject to modification. Sarvam, everything that we see is inert, subject to modification. He, anatmaiva, it is not me. Then it is what? Mrisha, it is unreal, and vinashi, it is perishable, subject to destruction that we have given on this side. And Atma, the consciousness, the seer, the self, is what? Drishta, is the seer. And what is the nature of the seer? Chiti svabhavaha, the nature of consciousness. Na drishyate, cannot be seen, and is not bound. So we'll spend a little bit time studying this particular verse. I think once you understand this verse, then the rest of spirituality becomes very clear. This is, I think, the very basic idea on which the entire edifice of the spirituality is built. It is the foundation. So first we can talk about the seer and the seen. Drig Drishya Vivek. There is actually a textbook in the office. It's a small book, which talks about the distinction between seer and seen. I think it's a good book if somebody is interested in pursuing this before. It's very well described. Who is the seer, the consciousness, and what is the seen? So it says, first of all, objects are seen, right? My eye, it sees various objects. It sees, you know, yellow flowers, red flowers. It sees the blue sky, the green trees. The objects are known to my eye. But does the eye change? If I see a green tree, does it become green? No. If I see the blue sky, no, it doesn't change. It remains the same. Also, can the tree see my eye? Can the tree know my eye? No. Or the sky, or the mountain, or the chair? No, they do not know the eye. So the eye is the seer, and the objects are seen. And the object cannot know the subject. So the object cannot know the eye. But is the eye the ultimate subject? No, because the eye, as physicists and biologists tell us, eye is a transmitter. Eye has a lens, and the light is transmitted from the eye to the mind. The mind and intellect, together the thinking ability. And the condition of the eye is known to the mind. If the eye is weak, or if the eye is sharp, like, you know, in the beginning I can see very clearly. As I get a little older, my vision, you know, goes down, and I go to the eye doctor. In fact, there was a sign in the eye doctor's office outside. It said, if you cannot read this sign, you are in the right place. These humorists are amazing. If you cannot read this sign, then you are in the right place. So I go to the eye doctor to get my eyes checked. So the condition of the eyes is known to the mind, and the knowledge of the objects is transmitted by eyes to the mind, and then the mind interprets, okay, this is a beautiful scenery, and, you know, some noxious smell comes, I don't like that. This is beautiful, this is ugly. So all these, you know, concepts are thought out in the mind. Or you say, oh, is the mind the ultimate knower? Okay, the mind, intellect knows everything. You know, I know everything. I know the books. I know the objects. I know the emotions. No, because the condition of my mind and intellect is known to me. Like my thoughts, they are known to me. You know, I have happy thoughts. I have unhappy thoughts. But the condition of the mind is not known by the eyes. Can the eyes see my mind? Like, can I see, you know, the thoughts, your thoughts going on? No. Because if I could, some of you would be thinking, when is this talk is so boring? When will it end so we can go home? Thank God I can't see. Or can the eye see my own thoughts? You know, like I'm sitting in the dark and somebody says, what are you thinking? I'll say, let me turn on the light so I can see my thoughts. No, I don't need to do that. My thoughts, the condition of my thoughts, my emotions, my concepts are known to me. So I know. I know what I know, and I also know what I don't know. Like I know that I know English, but I also know that I do not know Russian. So my knowledge and my ignorance are both illumined by me, the consciousness, the witness. Just as the objects cannot see the eyes cannot see the mind cannot know this consciousness or this witness. So this witness or consciousness, which we describe here as Om, is not known to us. But does that mean it does not exist? Is there a something within us that is the knower of the thoughts, that is the knower of the eyes, that is the knower of the objects? That is what we call as the seer or the consciousness. So let us see the distinction between the seen and the seer. So the first thing they say, that everything that is seen is inert. This chair is inert because we think if something can move, then it is alive. Like electricity. Now, electricity can move and illumine the lights, but is electricity alive? No, electricity is an object. It is inert. It is released from somewhere, in some dam, it is generated. And the switch, it can be turned on or off. If we turn off the switch for 5 years, the electricity will not move itself and turn on the light. Electricity cannot decide I'm going to illumine that bulb because I like it and I don't illumine that bulb which I don't like it. Then you say, people, I can see them and they are alive, they are not inert. But what we say is that all of us are alive because of the presence of the seer, the consciousness. The bodies that you can see, each one's body, is by nature inert, is made up of the five elements, air, space, fire, water, and earth. And it is the presence of consciousness which, like a spark, gives life to this inert body. Because once the consciousness is no longer functioning through the body, what we call a person who's dead, if he's lying here on the floor, the body is still there. The eyes are there, the ears are there, the brain is there, the liver, the pancreas. But none of it works because the spark of consciousness is no longer reflecting. So that's why they say it is inert. So whatever is seen is inert. Then whatever we see is changing. And there is constant change. If you look at our bodies, you know, we have changed from childhood to middle age to, you know, all those to old age. Objects are changing, you know, buildings are changing. Their new ones are built, the old ones are destroyed. Plants are growing, animals, birds, fish, everything is changing. Then they say, whatever you see is unreal. What do you mean unreal? You know, I can see this chair. How can you say this chair is unreal? What we consider real, if anything I can see with my eyes, it is real. I believe it. Seeing is believing. If I don't see it, it doesn't exist. Like people say, does God exist because I don't see him? But if everything I see is real, is that really true? Like, they say the earth is, you know, for us, the earth appears flat. Do you find the earth to be round? No, I see the earth to be flat, but the scientists tell us the earth is round. Then I say, earth is stationary. You know, I'm stable. At least, if nothing else, at least the ground I'm standing on is stable. It's unmoving. But the scientists tell us that this world is spinning fast on its axis and moving through the space around the sun at thousands of miles an hour. So I'm traveling at thousands of miles an hour on this ground, but I don't perceive it. Then people say, the sun is rising and the sun is setting. I perceive it. But is that the truth? The sun does. So just because I perceive it or I see it does not make it real, everything. And just because something I don't see make it unreal. Like you go to somebody's house and you see beautiful artificial flowers. Now the eyes see it and it looks so real, you know, the way these artists make it. And you say, oh, these are real flowers. And then you go close and smell it. And they have actually put perfume in that. So two senses have told you, the eyes and the nose, that these are real roses. But when you actually go touch it, you realize that these are false. So just because I perceive it with my senses does not make it real. So what is our definition of real? Real, what we say real and unreal, that which appears at this moment but will not stay the same in all periods of time. So that which cannot be contradicted. Not necessarily that which can be perceived, but that which cannot be contradicted remains the same in all periods of time, past, present, and future, in waking, dream, and deep sleep, in childhood, middle age, old age, death. All that remains the same, unchanged, is called real. Like, to give an example, the ocean is real, the waves are unreal. Unreal does not mean that they don't exist, but they temporarily appear. The waves appear for a short while, last a few seconds, and then merge back into the ocean. So the ocean from which the waves came is real, and the waves are a temporary appearance, just as gold. Gold is real. Now, out of the gold, you can make necklace, or you can make bangle, or you can make, you know, anklet or whatever, ring, whatever you want to make. But then if that model becomes old, or if you don't like it, then especially in India, it's very common. They go to the jeweler and they say, okay, I have this old jewelry, you melt it. And so the jeweler will melt it, give you the credit for that, and then he will make you a new ornament. Or if you want to make it for your daughter who's getting married or whatever, it's very common. So the gold is real. The necklace or the ring or the bracelet or anklet or whatever you have made out of it is name and form, is an appearance which is temporary. Nothing happens to the gold, whether it is in the necklace form or it is in the pure gold form. Nothing happens to the mud, whether it's made as a pot or made as a teacup or made as a vase. Whatever the different names and forms of mud, they may vary. The pot may break, the teacup may fall, but the mud remains permanent. So the mud is real, the pot is unreal. The gold is real, the necklace is unreal. The ocean is real, the waves are unreal. So all of us that are here on this earth at this moment, as the consciousness which is the substratum, which is the knower, is real, this body, mind and intellect of mind is unreal, because the body is changing, the body is temporary. None of us is going to live forever, even though we start becoming very miserable and sorrowful about death, but death is, you know, inevitable. Whoever is born will die. There is no second thing about it. If you are born, you will die. Only thing that does not die is what was unborn. What was never born will never die. So birth is automatic. So the moment your day of birth is written, birthday, your day of death is also written. Somebody up there knows, okay, this day this person is going to leave. So we are all unreal, we are all temporary. And it comes to that, we are all perishing. Just as the drugs, you know, they have the date of manufacture and then they have date of expiry, right? Okay, this date the drug was manufactured, after this date it cannot be used. Any equipment you buy, even the cars, you know, they give you a 5-year or a 7-year warranty. After that, we are not responsible. You know, somebody arrives, somebody leaves. It's all decided. Like your mother-in-law comes home, you always ask, when is she going to leave? So arrival is sure, and then you're waiting for the departure. So everything is changing. Everything is perishing. Everything is of the nature of temporary. So our problem is that we get attached to all of these. The second thing is that when it comes to other objects, I say, okay, that's not me. This chair is not me. This glass is not me. This watch is not me. My car is not me. My house is not me. But my body, no. That is me. That I am totally convinced. No matter how many books you read, no matter how many, you know, swamis come and talk on the stage, I'm not convinced. Why? Because we have this strong identification that I am this body. Ever since we were a little amoeba crawling or swimming in the ocean, to that little spider crawling, to the bird flying, we have this idea that this body is me. And then also it's body's modifications. Like I am a man or a woman, I am Indian or American, I am white or black, then I am a father or a mother, I am a brother or a sister, I am a child. But if you look at that, these are all changing relationships. Like I am a man or a woman, nowadays, you know, you don't even know, people change all the time. Or they may dress differently and you don't know who is who. And then, you know, I'm an Indian or an American. You are Indian, and then you come here, and then you get live for 5 years, 10 years, you get your citizenship, then you are no longer. Your citizenship can change. Your sex can change. Your name can change. You know, people change their name if they get married or if they for convenience or relationships change. You know, marriage, you are married today, then tomorrow you are divorced. You are a child today, but then if your parents are no longer, then, you know, you are no longer a child. So whatever I think about this body are all its relationships, all its attachments. Truly, the body itself has no independent existence because the body is also known. And whatever I know, whatever I see is inert, it's changing, it's unreal, and it's perishing. So body fulfills all four of the criteria. The body itself has no life. It is only the consciousness that is giving it life. It is changing. It is temporary, unreal, and it is perishing. So this brings us to what is the nature of the seer, which we call as the consciousness, also called as the witness, also called as the observer, also called as the knower. So whatever is seen is inert. Whatever the seer is of the nature of consciousness, is of the nature of enlivening. It is that which enlivens. And it is that one consciousness that we call as God, as Brahman or Father in heaven, which is not only Father in heaven, but Father everywhere. It is that one consciousness that illumines all animals, all birds, all plants, all fish. And it is the presence of this that we see as life. So if you ask, really, who am I? I am that unseen element which cannot be seen, which cannot be described, which cannot be explained. I cannot see this consciousness. I cannot hear it. I cannot smell it. I cannot taste it. Actually speaking, the scriptures say you cannot even describe it or think about it. Whatever I am speaking at this moment is just what some great masters told about this. But they even said that this nature of this consciousness is such that language cannot describe it. It is of the nature of awareness. It is of the nature of life. It is of the nature of consciousness which illumines. And in its presence, everything functions. So, how am I to know it? All they say is that the way to know it is to know that it is my true nature, my higher nature. My lower nature is this body, mind, and intellect, which at this moment to me looks very real. That is my lower nature. But in reality, my higher nature is the seer, the consciousness, which is unbound, which is not really involved in all the activities. The body is involved, and the body goes through its health and ill health and pain and joy. The mind goes through its problems. The intellect goes through its problems. But the illumining consciousness is not bound. It's not affected. Just as the electricity, even though illumining all the bulbs, if one bulb is lit and another one dies and is not lit, nothing happens to that electricity. The electricity remains the same. Electricity illumines all. Some bulb has the power, so it lights up. Another bulb is dead, you know, the fuse is gone or whatever. So the bulb is not illumining. So electricity remains the same, whether it's in the heater, whether it's in the air conditioner, whether it's in the refrigerator, whether it's in the microwave, whether it's in the radio, the TV. The electricity is the same, but the equipments are different, and the activities of the equipment depend on the nature of the equipment. So the electricity is not involved, but the electricity is required for all the instruments to function. So similarly, this consciousness functions through different individuals based on their nature. In a plant, it functions differently. In a cat, in a bird, in a fish, in a human, even among different humans, based on our nature, based on our thoughts. So the consciousness is same. It is unbound. It is unaffected. But the equipment is the one that is the constant factor. Just as electricity is the constant factor in all electrical equipments all over the world, all the bulbs, all the fans, all the air conditioners, anywhere in the world are all illumined by that one electricity, which is the same, which has same electrons, neutrons, and the, you know, the movement and everything. So similarly, this one consciousness functions through all. So the teacher says, who are you? Turn your attention to that which is permanent, that which is immortal, that which is your higher nature, and slowly detach yourself. Detach yourself from the scene. Constantly pay attention to the seer, the consciousness, the inner life principle. And the more you do that, the more you detach your attention from the scene, the closer you will come to the seer. So in our real life, I slowly have to develop a healthy attachment, especially to my body, develop a healthy relationship with my body. I use the body to function just as I use the car to drive, but I am not the car, so I am not the body. Now this concept, some of you of course have been coming here for a long time and it's very clear to you. For some it may be something new or something that still I don't believe it. It's okay, even if you don't believe it, even if you are not convinced, it's okay. But this is something that eventually we'll all have to understand. Because here we are telling you about yourself. I am learning about myself. So eventually we will get it. So the more you think about it, the more you apply it, the more you meditate upon it, the clearer it will become. So this kind of a subject is very useful to turn our attention from the outer world to the inner world, the inner life, inner consciousness. So it's a very beautiful verse, and I'm sure people will have some comments on it. And then next week we'll talk, not next week actually, they will have a few weeks of gap, but then we'll talk about a little bit more about the nature of the self or the consciousness. So today mostly we talked about the difference between seer and seen. Any comments? Yeah, that's a very good point. Yes. Different, like to an ant, the world looks very different than to us or than to an elephant. Yes. And then also how they interpret. Right now they're only talking about the lens, but how does an elephant interpret the world? Or how does an ant interpret? Their mind and intellect is even so much different from us. Even each individual interprets the world very differently. Like when you are happy, the world looks, everything looks happy, you know. And even if it's raining, oh, what a beautiful rainfall, you know. And another one who is sad, you know, even the heavens are crying because I am sad. So the world looks happy or unhappy. You know, they say the jaundiced eye, everything looks yellow to a jaundiced eye. Like a person wearing green glasses, the world looks green. So we look at the world through our mind and intellect. Yeah. No, I think we still carry that notion, because that individual, until he realizes. Yeah, I mean, you know, he's in a subtle world, but he thinks that subtle body is me. So in the heaven, he thinks I am this subtle body and I'm dealing with other subtle bodies. And there also they have jealousy and they have competition. Like we say, there is Indra, the king of gods, and the person who has a house next to Indra, he thinks I am superior to the guy who has a house down the street. So all our ideas still go there. Our jealousies and our greed and everything goes, whatever, nothing. This doesn't end until you realize, until you destroy your vasanas. Do you think that there is a difference between the In heaven also, they have competitions and they have everything. In fact, in our Puranas, they talk about jealousy between the gods, and then demons and gods are fighting, and all kind of things. Yeah, you're not free from that. Only a realized master is free. Well, I don't know. I don't think, I'm not sure. That's my question. Whether does the individual know that this world is... No, he thinks the world is real. But you mean, does he know when he's going to be born again? Probably not. No. I think he's still in ignorance. He just thinks it's like he's changed his address. And he's still living there. I think so. I mean, unless he has that, you know, deep knowledge. Maybe, yes. If you have understood that, yes. But still, the power of the vasanas is so strong, and this illusion is so powerful, that until you wake up, it's, in my understanding, it's just a change of address. Maybe we can ask Swamiji when he comes. Yes.
I think I read somewhere, but it's so rare that you sometimes choose your own parents depending on what you're going.
Yes. Now, that is very true. You choose your parents based on your desires, and based on your karmas, based on your actions. So it's not a voluntary, it's automatic. Based on my unfulfilled desires and based on my karmas, I am compelled to occupy. I have chosen it based on my desires, on my past actions. But I cannot at the last minute have a change of heart and say, I'm not going to be born as, you know, a child with leukemia. No. Because my karmas will compel me and my desires will compel me. So I have chosen based on my past actions, but it is an involuntary process at that time. But as far as learning, my understanding, there are two occasions you can learn. The one place you can learn is this earth, is this human body. That is the only place where you can learn. In heaven and hell, you are going to either enjoy or suffer the consequences of your actions. You do not learn in heaven. You just enjoy. It's like in Hawaii. Do you study in Hawaii? No. But if you found a reading a book of physics, you know, I have my test, they'll consider you a fool. You know, you're here to enjoy, to look at the beach and the scenery. So in heaven, you either enjoying, in hell, you are suffering. You don't have time to learn. Now, there is a one state of learning where you, if you are an evolved master, where you have gone to beyond heaven, there you then come in contact with other realized masters who will teach you. But aside from that, heaven and hell are not for learning. They are for enjoying or suffering. The place you learn is earth, here in this human body, not in an animal, not in a bird. Human is the only form where you have the ability to learn and to improve and to get from your past lives.
Okay, so see, I never got that part about hell. There is a hell, and you're going to get out of it and come back?
Yes. Actually, most... No. Actually, what happens is that most of the suffering, heaven and hell, are on this earth itself. In this life itself, whatever good or bad actions you have done, majority of them, you get the consequences. But say if you were an unusually good person and you were poor and suffering, or if you were an unusually bad person but you were very wealthy and rich and very successful and you died before you could go through all your actions. So all the scriptures describe that there is in our scripture also, they describe this temporary zone of what we call heaven or hell. And even if you don't believe in it, it doesn't matter, because again, it's not real. It is just a zone of experience. You know, it's not a world where you go. It's not a place. It is a realm of experience. But the point of the matter is that you go through multiple lifetimes. And the Buddhists describe a place called Bardo, Bardo, which is a world where you wait for a new body to become available that will suit your actions and your desires, your vasanas. And so that kind of a mother's womb you enter based on your actions. So there is a place we do wait, because some people are born within a few days of dying and some people are born several years after that. That's what they say, even 1,000 years.
So you could die, go to hell, get out of it, come
Yes. Once you have, say you have done, say, 10,000 bad deeds. So you spend that much time. And they even describe like containers of hot oil, really boiling oil. And then they give you a special body that is, that can tolerate that heat. And so if you have done really bad deeds, they actually dip you in oil and take you out and dip you in. They describe that as, and they can dip you 1,000 times or 500 times, and your body can, you suffer the pain, but the body can tolerate it. It doesn't get burnt to ashes or whatever. So they do describe those worlds. And then, of course, there are worlds of pleasure, you know, where there is music and dancing. And then they describe worlds where you don't even have to eat. You just imagine mango and you get the taste of mango. You imagine pizza and you get pizza. That for me would be heaven. If I could eat pizza 7 days a week. Gluten free. But I'm just, you know, and then also you never grow old there. You know, you're always young. But once you're, time is up. Once you have good karmas are up, then they kick you out. Okay, sir, time to go back. And then you go back and get into a new human body until you realize, till you become one with that consciousness. Then you don't need to be born again. Then you're like Jesus, you know, the Father in heaven and I are one. So that experience until you have. And that can only happen in the human body. Oh, Shri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, he says out of 250,000 or 500,000 people, how many people are here listening to this knowledge? You know? So in the Gita, he says out of thousands of people in this world, one person thinks about me. Me means God. And out of thousands of things about me, only one reaches me. So the amount of people who are going to church and reading and all, that's only a few. And out of them, how many have the true knowledge, have the real faith and have real love? And so but the prophets are very few. But at least by reading and by understanding, we are on the path. That's how I feel. That's why I feel grateful that to have the ability to understand and to share this knowledge. And I have met in this path so many great teachers and mahatmas and saints and monks that at least we are on the path. So it's encouraging. It's not discouraging. But you're right. There are very few. Yes, I think you have answered your own question. It is, if I am in a very unfortunate or unhappy situation, it is because of my previous actions in this birth or previous birth, or because of which I am suffering and I am miserable. But even in that situation, we find that people who have gone through a lot of suffering, sometimes the suffering becomes an avenue for them to escape. You find the stories, if you read about so many wonderful football players and athletes and artists and writers and musicians who came from terrible homes, you know, very, very bad homes, and they were beaten and they were, you know, horribly treated, and they just grew up on the streets. But then they decided, I don't want this as my permanent life. And they're able to get out of that. And you find stories, especially if I read sometimes articles, I like to read sports, and especially in Sports Illustrated and all, they talk about these players who came out of the slums and out of the worst. And after they have come out, then they decide that, A, I'm not going to go back. And then they become vehicle to help others. They'll start some charity, or they will donate a lot of their money. Some of them, of course, spend it in drinking and drugs and all. But then some of them, like Magic Johnson and all, these are people who have made foundations and places to help others. And then they say, my children should not. So, you know, not everybody who gets in that. Also, what happens is that they, once having fulfilled their karmas, even if they die and don't come out of that, but in this life, they were born to undergo the suffering of their previous. And having done that, then the next life will be better if they have finished whatever karmas they were. So both ways. I'm sorry? No. If you look at these monks and saints, their life is so peaceful. They are so happy. So the closer you are to the truth, the more happier and peaceful your life is. It's not perfect. Obviously, this earth is imperfect. This life here is imperfect. Even in a monk, he also goes through pain and goes through suffering and old age and all. But they are so close to the truth that they don't experience all the suffering and pain that you and I go through. No, a lot of people are very happy. The closer they are to the truth, the happier they are. Some of the people had gone on a pilgrimage, you know, a few years back to the Himalayas. And there is this Swami L.A. who takes people every year. And they had gone. And so my wife and some of the other people had gone. I missed that one. And they were introduced to a lady who was 100 years old. 100 years old. And they said, you must meet her. And she was an ordinary lady, not a very profound speaker or anything. But every man who came, she said, this is my Krishna. That means this is God. And every woman who came, she said, this is Radha. That means she saw God and Goddess in every man and woman. So every man and woman who came, she embraced them. Now, that you see a realized soul there. I mean, she's not a profound speaker. She probably doesn't even speak much, hasn't read much. But she sees God and Goddesses in everybody. And she embraces everybody as me. So there are people like that. And everybody, they said, you must go and meet her. And she said, my wife said, when she met her, she felt that she was in the presence of a great soul. And she still remembers, this is about 15 or 20 years back. So there are people like that on this earth who have reached that state of oneness. So it's not only Jesus and Buddha and Shankaracharya and Chinmayananda and all, but there are a lot of ordinary people walking the streets who may be very realized. And we may not even know that. Some of them may be just meditating in the monasteries or in the Himalayas or in the forest. Some of them may be just happy, blissful in their own self. So you never know.